Welcome back to the Four Podmen, the wrestling podcast we bring you each and every week on the Dynamo Podcast Network. Head over to YouTube, smash that subscribe and bell notification button. Audio versions of the show are available through Anchor on your Spotify and all that kind of good stuff. And if you want to contact the show, you'll find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at TPodmen. Gentlemen, how are we?
We are recording in progress.
Good. We are recording in progress. This is an episode that spawned out of our show last week on the Intercontinental Belt look back. We said that Ken Shamrock was a man that we needed to look at. So we're going to take a look at Shane Shamrock's career on this episode. Also, just to let people know that we've had a number of episodes on the network this week. We've had a Collector's Corner with Darren McComiskey. Absolutely outstanding collection. If memorabilia merchandise is your thing, unbelievable, he'll blow you away. And we also just dropped today a fantastic episode on New Jack.
We are in negotiations.
Because of after his recent passing. But tonight, we're going to change it up. We're going to have a look at a man who's very dynamic, who has success in a number of martial arts and also in pro wrestling, and a man that sometimes is often forgotten in the impact that he has made on both these sports. So where do we begin? Jay, Ken Shamrock.
Oh, Jesus, where do you even start with the most dangerous man on the planet?
Fighting.
From bell to bell. you know what? It was oddly enough, segue. I was only watching last week's episode where the episode idea was suggested, and I didn't remember suggesting it because obviously I had, you know, imbibed a little. But it was only when after I watched the episode, I was looking at myself on TV going, that's a great idea. And it all came flooding back. You talk about what fight culture has become. You want to talk about how seminal it is globally. You want to talk about new African champions, new Chinese champions, the globe has become one big place. Fighting is international, finally. We have got here through years of radio, television, cinema, whatever fucking entertainment field you want to name. And if you want to look at somebody who was the peg, the originator, the original transcendent cross-culture fucking badass from America to Asia, you know, from sideburns and homelessness to fucking gold wherever he went, you have to speak about Ken Shamrock, whether it be mixed martial arts or a love of pro wrestling. He took everything he did serious and he sold every fucking second of it, whether it was real or whether it was the glorious shores of Flesh Opera. The man's importance in this business has to be spoken about, even if the importance of this business chooses to ignore his legacy. He's another one of those that's just going to be a runaway story when he passes and everybody will start telling his truths. And now tonight, maybe we get to start that fucking chapter. He's too important to be forgot and too significant in this current, like I said, this martial culture of televised globalization. He's too important to be just whatever, for whatever reasons they have.
Yeah, in a business that's developing and all the time changing as it goes down this path of entertainment, I mean, he was a forerunner in that when you think about it, on both mixed martial arts and on pro wrestling, when you think about it, and generated money no matter where he went. He was the original...
And legitimized everything he did.
Yeah, and also coming into pro wrestling, legitimized pro wrestling in some respects as well. Joe, Ken Shamrock.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about his fighting career. I know a few bits, it's all right.
But, he won a lot.
especially in the early days. But like, he was a wrestler at a time when mixed martial arts was, it was clashes of styles. You'd have kickboxers going in against...
fighters.
Against brawlers. And you had wrestlers going in against judo guys and all this kind of crap. And it was... as far as I'm aware, there was pretty much no rules when he was.
They were ironing out the rules whilst he was doing it. The sport that we've got to now, which is almost as significant. Look, No other sport
kicking
in the world.
Kicking the balls, Jay, I think it was legitimately the only one that was almost...
It was frowned upon, but you could get away with it at times.
You could get away with it, but it was the one that you didn't see a whole lot of. But in fairness, headbutts and everything fucking went, stamps on the head.
From UFC 1, I mean, and he had fought in some... I think he had some pro wrestling pedigree before the early You'd. UFCs as well. But from UFC 1 on... It was every event ironed out something that wouldn't work. I mean, I remember in UFC 3, the first event I seen, it was a VHS ball for me, bought by my cousin back when shit was £35 and fucking Virgin Megastore on the keys.
Yeah.
You had, there was one contest where a pugilist, a boxer, wore one glove and he had one taped up hand. And even as an early teen, I'm looking at this going, why are you doing that? And also, the commissions said, why are you doing that? They ironed out the product of this sport in front of our eyes, which has never happened. It's a brand new sport, brand new. And the only one that ran concurrently through a global pandemic when everybody else said, let's not. UFC was still pioneering in that respect. But again, it was...
a reservation as well, wasn't it? That's the only places that they could get... They could get licenses for the first like 20 to 30 shows as well.
Anywhere that would have them. Yeah. If there was a bar with no local law and they had a parking lot, you bet they were setting up something. This shit didn't come from nowhere. It was men who wanted a fight for money. This is bare knuckle boxing gone from fucking two men piking it out each other in a car park to Golden Gloves.
In a street in Ireland.
Do you know what I mean? And in the space of 25 years, a sport has never progressed from its start to where we are now, where it's a globally recognized fucking cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
And Ken was the ship or the sail that...
He was the face. Yeah, he was.
He was the face that carried the ship.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt.
But you guys might be able to answer this for me, but I heard, once again, it could be a bullshit fucking story from back in the day when I was a young lad. But the story I heard is that he went in against one guy. It was one of his first fights in UFC. And your man wasn't a grappler at all. And he was throwing fucking digs at Shamrock. And eventually Shamrock got a hold of his leg and just tied him up like a pretzel and just tapped him out. And apparently your man, after the interviewed after the fight, said, as soon as he grabbed my leg, I just didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do because he was a kickboxer or whatever he was, wasn't he? And that's and as you said, Jay, the evolution, everyone can do everything now. You know, there isn't a spot they'll get into where they can't do it. And as far as I'm aware, Shamrock, once again, you guys can correct me. As I said, I don't know much about his fight. And I love Ken Shamrock, so I might hold this kind of idyllic thing about him in his fighting days. But that apparently he wasn't well liked by the crowd because he wasn't a striker. He wasn't getting the big knockouts. He was just tying lads up. And when he was interviewed after one fight, in the crowd were booing him. And he's there, I'm not here to entertain people. I'm here to fucking
win. That was more Dan Severn, to be fair. Shamrock mixed it up in the first two because it was mainly UFC 2 that he really came on the scene. And in fairness, Joe, I don't mean to call you out on it, but
No, I want to be called
out. Shamrock was a striker. Shamrock could mix it up and stand there toe-to-toe with lads. Like, the thing was, Shamrock was actually the wrestler that could also stand and box the fucking face off you. It was actually Dan Severn that was getting booed, and the Gracies mainly got booed more than anybody. But Dan Severn would get booed quite a bit. But no, Shamrock was actually, like, literally the golden boy. You know what I mean? He was the guy that...
He was the human Wolverine.
Yeah, he was that's it.
Yeah, you know, he had a very impressive look too. You know what I mean? Like you look at
bad
you look
looking at the guy, motherfucker.
All natural too.
when you look at the lads, he was you know opposite. You know the likes of a Severn or a Gracie. Like no one looked like him. You know what I mean? He was like a bodybuilder nearly in the ring. Like he just looked phenomenal. And like
bodybuilder with skills, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And when you look at when he came in to the pro wrestling game, to the WWE, like if you look at the guys, they were trying at the time to legitimize pro wrestling because they brought him in. You had Dan Severn came into it. Steve Blackman was there.
True.
Don Frey. Got, yeah. It was always a flirtation.
They tried to get, what's his name? The Godfather. They had him as Kama for a while, you know, which didn't work because he wasn't a legit fighter. You know, but they were trying to bring that realness into it. And the only one of them that was that did really well was Shamrock out of it because he was
very marketable.
Yeah, and like Severn was arguably a better wrestler than him, let's be fair, you know what I mean? But he didn't have that. One, he didn't have the look. Two, he didn't have that old, he didn't have the charisma either. You know,
he was vanilla, yeah. Yeah, he was vanilla.
Pardon?
He was vanilla, like
Severn. Yeah, yeah. You know, like to wrestling connoisseurs, he's amazing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To the rabid WWE Attitude Era fans at the time, he was shit. You know, just like, get him the fuck out of there. You know, I want to see some madness. You know? And Shamrock brought that madness because he'd scream and shout. Like, and as I said, he had that, you know, that physical look that he had. And they called him the world's most dangerous man. And, you know, you couldn't but be kind of like...
I think that was man. That was off the cover of a toy magazine or some shit like that. They put that handle on him and the company ran with it. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it was legit.
Yeah, because like everyone was fucking terrible. Like when he snapped.
Snap is the best in the business. Like, yeah.
He, as I said, because of his look and how massive he was, you'd be like, Jesus, this man's just about to murder someone. You know, he was. He's a personal favorite of mine. During the Attitude Era,
he had a backstory that most people brag about and is kayfabed. Like, I mean. He legged it away from home at fucking 12 or 13. He got stabbed by another child. He got picked up off the fucking street. His early days, you know, if you were to put together a psychotic fucking X-Man, like when I say the human, the actual Wolverine, it's all there.
Jay? Fake. Would you agree with this statement I'm about to make? Because I know Niall will bring me in, but you don't need to, Niall. I'll just ask this and I'll let you all kind of trip out on this for a little bit. In 1997-1998, right, where Tyson's coming off the back of biting Holyfield's ear, right, and obviously coming in, right, the only other man that you can think of conceivably that in a street fight that would go toe-to-toe with Mike Tyson is Ken Shamrock.
Without fear and go at him. Yeah.
And go at him and possibly make Mike Tyson cry, because if he gets one of those Tyson digs and goes, all right, motherfucker, but guess what? You're not going to have an ankle tomorrow.
Boom. It's a story of levels and times. Pro boxing is as illustrious as pro wrestling in its heritage.
Yes.
I mean, the early 1900s is when your pro wrestling or your...
Golden era.
You know what I mean? Your shooters and your fucking grapplers start getting on and we get into Hooker's the golden age. Yeah, and then the fucking the Goldust Trio. You've got fucking pro boxing there as well with your... fighting fucking your Jim Johnsons and your Rocky Marcianos
and all, exactly.
MMA is brand new and unheralded in the field of combat sports.
Yes.
And when I say certain men were 5 years before the time or after the time, if UFC had been 10 years previous, Mike Tyson being the baddest man on the planet in there with Stone Cold and throwing arguably one of the finest work punches in the business.
Was it work though? It was just Michael's is very quick.
Wait, that one's quicker than lighter. The other one's quicker than fucking sound. You know what I mean?
Exactly,
but it's neither in or there. It's half of, six of one and a half a dozen of you do that. But the world didn't understand. And it's only now we're realizing what MMA is. Bad men are bad fucking men.
Yes.
I mean, we've seen Brocky enter MMA and we watched Alistair Overeem stalk him, hunt him down and break him with a fucking kick. Do you know what I mean? There weren't no fucking single tickets to Suplex City that night.
Wiley was hurt, to be fair. Let's not use Brock as an example, to be fair.
Well, let's use him. He got into the ring in fair's fair. You get in. I'm not taking anything away from Brock. He's a bad man. It takes guts, balls, and intestinal, albeit broken intestinal fortitude, to step into a ring with somebody like Alistair Overeem. I mean, that man was at 280 pounds flying through the air with knees that just fucking clock people in Japan.
But I'm just saying, healthy Brock Lesnar was a different.
Well, look, healthy or broken, Brock entering that world, collegiate wrestling and mixed martial arts, the difference between them is a kick to the mouth can shut you the fuck up. That doesn't happen in any other sport.
Randy Couture will tell you a punch to the mouth for Brock Lesnar can shut you the fuck up too. But anyway,
that's true. But Randy spent an awful lot of time hugging people against the cage. But again, this isn't an MMA Mark conversation. Mark Hunt can
also tell you that. Sorry.
True. A man who's looking for work at the moment.
Duncan, yeah.
Well, like I said, if
no, I know I'm
the original point when people are making a big deal about Iron Mike in the ring. Ken Shamrock was up there with him in the terms of baddest man on the planet. There's not between them. And
if there was a street fight with Mike Tyson in 1997, you know, because as Tyson says, he came from the streets. If there was a street fight with Mike Tyson and Ken Shamrock, there's only one man that I'm putting my money on.
I know who my money's on.
It's Ken. Every day of the week, twice on Sunday.
In fairness, if he had a bit one of Ken's ears off, he would have been down in my favour at that stage anyway.
He'd have probably got food poisoning.
Probably would have a mouthful of fluid.
You know what I mean? If Mike was iron, Ken's the blacksmith. I'm sorry, but
that's a great point. That's a great point, Noel. Yeah, he would have got a mouthful of fluid.
This is a man, I think, you know.
Here's your introduction into the Cauliflower Alley Club. Mike, well, yeah. Well, you see, the thing about
fuck it... Fuck you, I got two of them.
Well, the problem is, you know, it was like gunshots, and then all of a sudden it was in my mouth, so I'm already part of the club, you know?
Not taking anything away from the Iron One, he is.
Hey, I love the man. I love the man, I'm just saying.
He's... Yeah, well, look, when you've got a man that bad, of that notoriable recognition... And then Ken's over there standing in the shadows going, I do what he does for about 20 grand a year.
Yeah, like, I'm for free on some days.
Yeah, and I also love it. I'm fucking into it.
And like, can I just like say something as well about Ken? It's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, obviously this is a man, like Jay alluded to the fact that grew up on the streets. Anybody that hasn't, we're not going to get into like the story because I think it's a great story that people should check out themselves in terms of where he came from and his background and how he became a Shamrock and into the Lion's Den. It's a very, very interesting story. Plenty of interviews out there with Ken talking about it. And you know, it's all legit too. It's not Hollywood
straight bullshit. Straight shooter when he talks.
It's not Hollywood bullshit, old cooking. You know, it's legit. I think the thing about Ken is that he still remains an element of humbleness, but he knows how tough he is and he knows what he's went through. But the thing is, Noel, you would agree as well, when he came into the WWE, right, after all these fights, after all these crazy UFCs where you're getting these lads bouncing heads off fucking pretty much wood, I doubt they even had much of a mat on that because of the budget.
No.
He still was a good-looking guy. And didn't look too beat up. But that's how dangerous this man was. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he had the aesthetics of like a shorter, you know, Ultimate Warrior, say, for example. He had that kind of body, just the huge shoulders. Huge
chest. He's a freak.
And came in looking like a fucking comic book character. You know what I mean?
Carved out of granite.
Yeah.
Shadow of a doubt. Like he was an unbelievable specimen, and probably I'd say the locker room when he did come in sat up and took notice and go, so you want me to go in there now and do pro wrestling with Ken Shamrock?
Imagine how Sean felt. Imagine Sean.
Have you seen how he earns his money?
I'd say Sean, when he was in the ring with him and Hunter, Sean and Hunter were probably like, okay, well, this guy, we'll call it in the ring. Yeah please. And plus, don't forget, didn't he have like 6 months up at the dungeon as well beforehand? I'd say Michaels and Hunter going, the hearts are training people to kill us. We're not working with him.
I'm sure the whispers were going around. Yeah, he went up to the dungeon for 6 months and he stretched out still.
I think that's the irony about Ken Shamrock. I mean, it's easy to look at him and look at his legitimacy as a hard man. But when you consider that he was arguably pro wrestling before he was MMA, and his love for the business legitimizes it, not his physicality for the business.
Could I say something there as well, Jay, to you? I'm not calling any names out. A man that's come from a legitimate fighting business, like where your life is on the line, as you said, for maybe 20 grand if you're lucky. $5,000
enough to pay your coaches, your corner, and your rent.
Absolutely. And then maybe sleep in your car for the night, you know, on some nights because you couldn't afford a hotel, depending on what town you're in. You know, certain guys that came into this business and made millions and millions, and I'm not calling it Warrior on this one, but I'm saying there's other people out there too that get fucking away scot-free. Goldberg is a perfect example. You know what I mean? That did not genuinely love the business.
There's no shortage of them.
There is no shortage of them, but made big money. Here's a man that came in, a legitimate fighter, a legitimate tough guy, that could kick the fuck out of anybody and their aunt and the Nasty Boys, even after their little cheap shots.
After trying to kill him.
After trying to kill him, and then literally we're like failing. And we're like two little pansies in the airport then when they saw him fucking few months later.
Probably still running.
Later, still running. But a man that came in, and like Jay said, I just wanted to point that out, actually loved the art of pro wrestling and still does.
Still does.
And doesn't think it's phony or fake or anything like that. And just went in and became a student. Went up to the Harts, learned how to do it properly, WWE style, under the tutelage of fucking Bret Hart, of all people. You know what I mean? And learning it and just wanting to be the best possibly be and going to the best. And I just have to say, I think that's a great... Joe, you can come in there. I know you want to make a point.
Yeah, just when you were talking there, lads, about, you know, all the training he did, how dangerous he was, a legit tough guy and all this kind of stuff. And you were talking about how Triple H, you know, your the fake scenarios of Triple H and Shawn Michaels going, the Hart was training people to kill us. I know I haven't heard any stories about him being too stiff in the ring or
never
taking
never.
Liberties or anything. Like
never,
that,
no.
I mean?
No.
Yeah, and he's the kind of guy that he would have got away with. There weren't going to be too many that stiff him back, like, you know. But I never heard any stories of that where he took liberties.
Roof or snow, or he gave the it a spark story. Or the holly shit. Yeah, no.
Yeah, only one story I ever heard of Ken Shamrock getting angry in a locker room and kind of wanting blood was Montreal, which is understandable because obviously they were, that's close-knit stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, he's seen him as one of his boys.
Yeah,
no, that's a very different story.
That's it. Yeah, but no, Joe, to your point, I've never heard him being unprofessional or losing the plot with anyone either.
Or breaking anybody or being sloppy.
Throwing his weight around or potatoing anybody. Yeah, I agree. Good point, Joe.
Well, we'll run down through some of his accolades because I think he's a man who deserves these mentioned to set the scene for the thing. Lutez Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame inductee.
Man, that's a big one.
Massive. UFC Hall of Fame, to touch on Jay's point, inaugural inductee into the Pioneer Wing class of 2003. Wow. So that says it all. You know, this was a man who was an absolute...
Was it that long ago, yeah?
Yeah, 2003, yeah.
Jesus. Oh, yeah.
UFC Super Fight Championship, one-time inaugural winner, two successful defenses. Longest fight in UFC history he had at one stage, 36 minutes. With no less Royce Gracie at UFC 5.
That's
That's a groundbreaking match.
That's conditioning, man. Like, talk about
36 minutes of real fighting.
Like, Niall, I'm sorry, I don't mean to throw you off kilter there, but just we'll say this really quickly and then you can move back on.
Yeah, go ahead.
That is mental, like, because steroids don't make you go that long. Not conditioning wise. Like, I mean, steroids, will make you look aesthetically great. But they don't make you fucking go 36 minutes in a real
current fight. Current championship match goes for 25 minutes.
They're case in point. Yeah.
He did that and then some.
And that's what breaks, Jay.
That's what breaks.
They get breaks. Those guys didn't get breaks back then.
That's mental.
Over half an hour just fighting.
We're also probably going to have to do a Sakuraba episode as well.
And you got to remember, for that 36 minutes of time, he was getting smothered by jiu-jitsu as well at times.
Yeah.
Conditioning is something sick. Anyway, sorry.
He was always really well conditioned. And look, you wouldn't have been prepared any other way in the Lions then, to be honest.
Yeah,
very, very good point. Yeah. The original. Yeah.
King of Pancrase, 1994.
Pancrase, a pioneer of the Pancrase sport, the man who again ascended that company's name to the point where it was communal. In 94, nobody ever heard of Pancrase, and most of the world hadn't until about 98-99 after Shamrock made other companies.
They start appearing in like magazines like our good friend Finlay Martin and magazines like that.
Yeah.
Pride Grand Prix 2000 final super fight winner. So successful over in Pride, which was really the lion's den, if you think about it.
And what was the Grand Prix? No, again, well, if I'm not mistaken, Grand Prix and Pride back then were more than one fight a night.
Three.
Tournament bracket situation, wasn't it?
Yeah, the whole Grand Prix was fought over a weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, but you could have... Oh, sorry, Noel, you're right. My apologies.
Yeah, you'd have a minimum of two fights a night, and you'd go through Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday would be the actual final.
Incredible. Still mental.
2 days in a row, we're getting the head boxed off.
One weekend.
Yeah, Joe.
Or in
I've
his
done
case,
two hell and backs
in
a weekend.
3 days of boxing the head off, lads.
Like, literally, you're grand. Imagine Tyson Fury and AJ doing that now. Like, Tyson Fury
now
should be fucking, you know, your man tomorrow and then AJ a week later. Imagine.
Yeah.
Floyd Mayweather, one fight every 2 years. UFC, one fight every 6 months if you're a heavyweight.
With kicks to the bollocks and everything.
If you're any other fucking...
Yeah, I agree. Anyway,
I remember they were talking there not so long ago in the UFC, Jay, about bringing the Grand Prix back. But they were talking about spacing them over months.
Oh, months. They have them back. They have the bracket tournaments now for Miss and Bells. They have them in Bellator now, and they call them Grand Prix. Unless it's happening over a weekend, that's not a Grand Prix. That's not
George
a tournament.
Masvidal is not going to be part of it anymore. Anyway, let's just move on.
PWI Most Improved Wrestler of the Year 1997. Joe, I put this one in for you. Total Nonstop Action. NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Gauntlet for
is that
the
a
Gold.
New company?
Gauntlet for the Gold 2002 to Heavyweight. And Impact Hall of Fame 2020. Doesn't quite match up to Lou Tez, but again, not too bad.
I'm sure he's as chuffed.
Absolutely. I mean, any plaque he gets his hands on, I'm sure it's happy. puts it in the soil. Hangs it on the wall of the motorhome.
I don't know whether he wants his hands on Joey Ryan's plaque, but we digress.
God, yeah.
Who?
World WWE, lads. Intercontinental champion. Tag team champion one time with the Bossman. King of the Ring 1998.
I remember that. Yeah,
and obviously the WWF Intercontinental Championship Tournament 1998.
Right, I'm going to take this when you give me the permission, shopkeeper. Good.
You can fire it away now because I'm done with his accolades.
Right, and I'll tell you why I'm going to fire away with that, because in fairness, one of the only reasons, Joe knows this to be truth, and anyone that knows me knows this to be truth, I gave up on WWE once screw job happened, right? I was a very emotional 13-year-old. And fucking, I said, fuck you. I'm leaving, you know. I was Cartman. I was out of there. But, you know, sometimes, because I love the business at the end of the day as well, like, I mean, if I had a Saturday off, if I'm flicking through TV channels, of course, if there's wrestling on, I'm going to see what they're doing. I just always had a sour taste if they were on. I was like, yeah, look at that fucking idiot. Look at that idiot. I mean, when I saw Triple H, I was like, you're just shit. This is the way I felt at that time, you know? But Ken Shamrock and The Rock were two shining lights for me that I was like, oh, yeah. And, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin loved them. But I have to say, the work initially, the program, because it was really Ken done a great program, obviously, with Owen Hart, which we talked about on a previous episode. We didn't talk about the work that Owen done with Ken on a previous episode, but they had an absolute, like, that was kind of really like his introduction to getting a proper, you know, they had the whole Lion's Den stuff and
a program.
Yeah, like, and they really worked the angle of him being the guy that was of legitimacy, and they brought Owen in, and they done it in a work style really, really well. But I think the big one that made Shamrock, like, kind of, you know, stand out was his program with The Rock. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, and this is prime Rocky Maivia, like, you know.
Who?
Hey, Rocky Maivia.
Holla back.
He's always going to be Rocky by me at the me, damn it. But no, this was just absolutely unbelievable stuff. And I think when you look at what he done, I mean, the fact that he didn't win a WWE championship is a testament to the politics in WWE. And again, to the click. Because again, they weren't fans. Why would they be? He did have that match with Sean at In Your House DX, which I do hear, because that was the In Your House the month after the screw job. And apparently Sean was legit afraid for his life for that one. because some people had made a bit of a rib backstage that, like, Shamrock's out for blood and he could go back to UFC anytime he wants. And he's just going to do his mate a favor. But, you know, again, testament to the man, professional, done the job. I thought that match showed that he could hang with the likes of a Michaels, who was, you know, at the tippy top of his game. And how he was just so easily fucking just disregarded and still disregarded.
Still.
Is just, it just absolutely baffles me, and I can only think of it as a personal thing. I mean, Shamrock thinks it's a Triple H thing. I don't know. I'm not there. I'm not part of it, so I'm not here to fucking create rumor and innuendo, but that's his own words. You can hear.
You're right, isn't it weird? I think that's the only thing in his whole career that hurts him, that the WWE just won't acknowledge what he did.
Yeah.
And he has every right to feel a little bit slighted or hurt
by that. Yeah.
And yeah. It's the big question over it, isn't it? It's one of those Warrior Macho Man questions, like, what did Ken do to deserve? When you've got that, and he's been in your company, and he's, let's face it, if you're running on 60, 70% legitimacy, and this guy wades in and does his business and invests himself so hard and so fairly and so squarely in your company, why won't you invest a little back in him when you're willing to have Ted DiBiase back every second week on segments when he's just, you know, had an illustrious career, like, but isn't to the quality of Ken, you know?
Yeah, apparently Ken holds Hunter obviously responsible for it. He said that they've had a bit of a thing, and that's what he believes in. You know, maybe Hunter believes that, like, Ken didn't bring enough to the table to be, like, you know, like a warrior to bring them back, or which is fair.
But the crossover money that could come back off it.
But there's there is something. Again, it all boils down to just, I suppose, what, you know, we weren't there. We don't know what happened. We don't know. Like, I mean, it's, you know, for all we know, Ken probably looked at someone like a Hunter and said, "You're shit. I'm better than you."
Maybe it's fear. Maybe it's old school fear.
Yeah, it could be that.
Maybe too. I am afraid of you because you're a bad man and you want to hurt me.
Even at 50 odd years old, you still got veins bigger than my head.
Yeah, listen, he was probably one of the only kids who ever went up to train in the dungeon and had still in locks. He's like, "Oh, yeah, it's good. I didn't know this one."
Yeah, you know what? I like you, kid. You're all right.
Say, what are you doing now? I haven't had this one on me. Well, did Mr. Hart. No, don't stop. It's good.
Apparently, there is an interview out there that someone asked that question. Just kind of like about Shamrock, and they were saying, did Stu take you down to the dungeon? Because obviously what you've achieved is ridiculous. And no, but Shamrock actually said, he goes, the old man had some shit I'd never fucking seen before. And he said, he actually made, like Shamrock said, he goes, he showed me this thing, and he goes, and it actually made the vein in my temple pulse where I thought I was going to fucking lose blood. And he goes, and I couldn't do anything about it. It's like, it's fucking, the guy is,
it's just like the passing on of history. Like, both of those sports started in the same place. We've talked about the original Stretches and Shewers. Stu was Shamrock
back in the 1920s.
Yeah. It's like, you know, show me what Jean LaBelle never showed anybody. It's like, oh,
there you
well.
Go. There you go.
Like, there's parallels to them, and the fact that
the
main man from the Lion's Den is up there in the dungeon getting stretched by a guy who has the original fucking license from the guys who were in the 30s and 20s, and you're like, this is bigger than pro wrestling the way we understand it. This is the legacy of heritage meshing into one place, and it's between the turnbuckles. It's just
I'd say on that point, Jay, I would imagine that Stu was pulling out moves he hadn't used 20
years.
Because of this guy, he was like, geez, this lad knows what he's at. I have to pull out the big guns.
This is how I killed a guy.
You know what I mean? Because it was like, you know, because someone like Stu Hart is a very proud man, and a big time, you know, loves wrestling with his absolute every sinew within his being.
Hmm.
You know, and someone Shamrock comes up and he's like, right, I can't let this guy show me up. So I'd say he was pulling out shit that he never taught his sons. You know what I mean? I don't show this to them
because I love their mother.
I need to teach him. You know, I have to be able to teach him something. So I have to go deep into the vault and pull out, you know.
That's what Shamrock said. He goes, I come out with stuff going, fuck, if I'd have done that in a legit fight, that'd be it. But do you remember even, I know we're segueing, but that shows you how, like, people think it looks sadistic, but when you look at someone like fucking Stu, for example, do you remember he used to, like, remember the fucking wrestling with shadows, and he has your man on the ground, and goes, if you can see here, the veins are pulsating in his head, the blood is losing in the eyes, and his eyeballs are going to blow.
This is how I used to earn money in 1948.
This lad has studied how to fucking take the life from your very soul.
Yeah. Human anatomy without a degree. And if you squeeze the middle toe, you can make a guy's eyeballs pop.
Kind of like pro wrestling. Pro wrestling for the Suns was easy in the end, isn't it, when you think about it?
Anyway. It is, though. But anyway, forgive me. I've let us off astray into mirth.
We'll do a Stu Hart episode. There's no doubt about it. No, sorry. It's only fitting you should run us down through the career. Go on, kick us off there and get us into Ken Shamrock.
Into his TNA days, is it?
No, sorry. You can come to that later on. I mean, he makes his debut.
Bring it back to wrestling. This is the whole same. Please, Joe, bring it back to wrestling.
I kick you off, Joe. He makes his debut in 1997, February 24th, on a Raw episode, and he's billed as the world's most dangerous man. Take it up from there.
Yeah, well, as I said earlier, like they were trying to legitimize wrestling at the time. They brought him, Severn, Blackman, and all that in. And, and as I said, like Blackman had a very good look too, you know what I mean? But he was very kind of gimmicky. Stiff. He was gimmicky too, Jay, you know what I mean? He was going in, he was doing his fucking...
That's all
he was trying too hard.
He was doing his... I don't know if I'd say it was a creative thing, you know, go in and show how skillful you are. And it looked very... came across as quite hokey, you know. And he'd be there and he'd be throwing his sticks around and all that. Well, he'd beat the piss out of most people, like, you know what I mean? But it did look quite hokey. Whereas Shamrock walked in. The only other person I can remember at the time when I was watching was like, the only other person I ever saw wearing gloves like that was Vader, who was another scary fucking dude. Like, you know what I mean? They came in with those gloves on. And, you know, to me, that's fucking scary shit.
He pussied out to Shawn Michaels, in fairness. He doesn't have a say.
But not against Ken. Apparently, they had a very stiff knock in the ring. Yeah.
I'd imagine so.
Yeah, no, in Vader's quote, I've never hit a man as hard as I've hit Ken Shamrock, and I didn't seem to jolt him.
Yeah, Vader lost his soul that day.
Yeah.
400 pounds. What the hell?
But but as I said, like, he had that, you know, not only was he a legitimately badass dude, but he looked phenomenal too.
Yeah, he was a movie star.
Yeah, absolutely. And he a supreme, supreme athlete. You know, he really, really was. I talked about it. I can't remember what show it was. But I talked about that time he was in the straitjacket and he hit a Hurricane Rana, and I'm pretty sure it was Billy Gunn, who's no small man. And he cleaned up straight over. Just phenomenal stuff.
Natural athlete, yeah.
Yeah, oh, freak. Absolutely. Yeah. Pardon?
He was an absolute freak.
Absolutely. Yeah. He was, and I his probably the only thing that let him down was I don't remember him being doing any promos. I remember him doing some shouting, but I don't remember him being on a mic at any stage.
But he was probably never given a chance, to be fair. That was probably creative. Like, we don't need him to talk, you know.
But that was, yeah, no, it was probably the attitude sometimes of the big company is less is more. Don't talk, yeah. Be dangerous. And what are you going to say? What are you going to say? Just do it in the ring. Do it between belts. And we'll keep a mystique about you. Because I remember in the early days, didn't you have Heyman walking him down as well? Well, I'm not mistaken in saying I've seen pictures with Heyman behind him holding belts. No?
I don't remember that, no.
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 Maybe that was a press photo. It was Cornette, maybe. It was Cornette. I remember seeing a picture online and Cornette was holding a load of his fucking
belts. That's possible because he would have been still at that time, yeah.
Well, I do remember Severn used to come down with a load of belts.
Severn came down with the NWA belt and the UFC belts. He used to come down with a few belts.
No, I've mixed them up. I definitely have.
Do you remember Severn's finisher as well when he used to do the whole he used to just get the head under there and lay back and he'd wrap his legs around the torso?
No, it definitely was then. I remember seeing a small blurry picture. Yeah.
Shamrock had the ankle lock and Severn's worked move was he basically grabbed the head in there, he took it in and then like
drop back.
The other guy's back would be on his belly and he'd wrap the two legs around and he'd hook it in and it was actually probably probably a more legit finisher. It was actually really
something
nice.
We'll be seeing again in the near future.
Yeah, I used to try it on little brother again. Sorry.
Jesus. Only bloke in Dublin who calls Joe Little Joe.
Yeah, he's twice the size of me now.
He's a big boy.
Big show. I never choked him. It was only work.
I know.
It's a wonder he survived his childhood.
I never heard that.
It made him the money he is today. He's hard to beat in a mill.
It's an Irish thing.
Well, we touched on In Your House the Generation X already. So we went to early 1998, starts feuding with The Rock and his Nation of Domination stable over the UFC belt. Yeah. Memories of that period, Joe?
Once again, like as you guys can attest to, my memory is dog shit. So I don't remember a whole lot of that now, to be perfectly honest with you.
I fired you last week and you're still here.
I forgot you even did that to me. No, I do remember him feuding with The Rock, all right. I have a vague recollection of that. And as Ian said, they had a great program together.
Yeah.
But the one that really sticks out in my mind, probably because of the stipulations of the matches, is the Owen Hart one, because they had the Dragon's Den and the Dungeon matches.
Yeah.
They probably shouldn't have worked as well as they did. But you had two very good operators, especially in Owen, who was probably, which put putting those matches together, and they worked really, really well. But, Ian remembers them. Rivalry with The Rock and
Up. Yes, Lions Den matches with the stiff cages. Yes, the little Lachlan cages.
They do one up in Calgary. Remember there was a show and they said we were going to do one up in Calgary. I believe that was the pay-per-view, Niall, wasn't it?
The one up in
Calgary. Remember Jim Ross was like, this is live from Calgary with no fans. And that's where they've done one of the first Lions Den matches or something. It probably wasn't in Calgary. It's probably in the back. But if my memory is correct.
There was only a handful of them. It was definitely in a different area that night.
Yeah,
match.
Yeah.
You know, they did announce that it was somewhere else. And there was
Calgary.
Spattering of fans in the bleachers, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I think it was.
No, you're conflagrating. There was two or three of them. There was one with the stiff cage, and then they did one in the den.
Yeah.
Or in the dungeon.
In the dungeon, yeah.
There we go. That's the one. Sorry, Jay.
My
apologies, yeah.
Yeah. So June 1998, of course, he goes into the King of the Ring and he eliminates Mark Henry, Kama, and The Rock, as well as Jeff Jarrett to win the tournament. So it becomes King of the Ring 1998. We've already alluded to the Hart Family Dungeon matches are fully loaded and stuff like that. Turns heel, Joe, October 1998, and won the vacant Intercontinental Championship, defeating X-Pac in the final of an 8-man tournament. Memories? Any memories of that tournament? Or
you keep asking the wrong man about memories.
this is your man job.
I know. Yeah. Look, you know, I love
different
man,
different company.
I certainly do. Anyway,
right man, wrong company.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember them all. I remember them all.
When you were asking me about sorry.
Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just gonna say when we were talking about Macho Man. My first and greatest wrestling love. I can remember fuck all of it, actually, individual things.
Beef isn't it a good thing that we sit down with experts who remember the finer points of our greater memories? I mean, these two men teach me weekly, and I remember seeing this shit, but I don't remember shit except for the emotions and how it made me feel.
I was just about to say that, Jay. Like when the Macho Man was mentioned to me. You know, it gets me in. You know, that's where I get my fucking memories from. Like, rather than beer. You know, genuinely, like, it's just like it's how he makes me feel. Like, you know, when I hear about Macho Man Randy Savage, it was like, oh man, I fucking loved him. And like the same with Shamrock, it's like Ken Shamrock. Oh, I fucking loved him. Oh, what did you love about him?
I'm glad you're not fired because you're the same as me. I love sitting talking about this shit with these men because they put the caveats and the dots and cross the T's and the shit I profess to love. I mean, I know I love it, but I don't know where it happened, when it happened, or who it happened with. And sitting with these men is like, re-educate me.
And this is where we dot the T's across the I's.
All right, it's up to us. ask me the question, shopkeeper.
Ask me the questions and I'll tell you the answers, yeah? In November, he joins McMahon's corporation because McMahon promised him a place in the family for services rendered.
Yeah.
On December 14th, wins the tag team championships off the New Age Outlaws with the Big Boss Man. That was his tag team championship that he won. They held the titles until January 99 when they lost to Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart. So this is the link again with Owen Hart that we were talking about earlier.
Yep.
Began feuding in 99. Began feuding with Billy Gunn, Goldust, Val Venus, who all made overtures about his kayfabe sister, Ryan.
The weird thing about that is that Shamrock was dating her in real life. Like, that was weird.
But that's Vinnie Mac. You see, this is, I mean, look, it's all starting. You know what? It's actually funny now.
When you can't get your own.
Yeah, like I might be able to cross the dots and you know, cross the
O's. No, no, leave it. Cross the dots. And dot the T's.
Dot the T's, yeah. There
you go. So, I remember wrestling history better than fucking literature.
the lines are best when they're blurred.
The lines are best when they're blurred. But no, it's funny because I would have, you know, known stuff from obviously the magazines back then as well. But obviously, I'd watch whatever I could if it was just on. I wouldn't seek it, if that makes sense. But if it was on, I wouldn't turn it off because I'm like, I'm not fucking turning wrestling off. I know you're not there anymore, Brett, but I'm watching. Don't hate me. But yeah, I'd watch some of the stuff and I was like, again, I wasn't a fan of the Attitude Era, just like Jay wasn't. I was the same. It wasn't really my bag. I didn't like it. It was too, you know, it just wasn't my bag. That's it. We're not going to get into the Attitude stuff. But anyway.
The wound of Montreal was still open.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it all got too jackass too quick, and there was way too many suggested and incest angles, and then everything got weird.
Exactly, it was very weird. But the problem was, I can see why now, looking back, why Shamrock would blame certain people that he blames on him, because technically he wins the King of the Ring, as you mentioned. He's definitely on the fucking... to steal a pun on that beautiful hat that you have on there, Niall, the upper tier of the roster. Cheap plug, which you can find on Dynamo Podcast Network. But he was on that rise, and then someone stopped him, and something stopped him. And he seems to know who it is, and I'm not surprised at who it is, because in 1998,
1999,
Sean cannot be blamed on this, so I'm 100% sure who it was. And then he goes down to Val Venus and working with like King Mabel and all these jabronis. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like I think his path was sewn out for him. And you know what? Jay made a point. Probably jealousy from a certain person. Because don't forget, that certain person that we're talking about back then was an out and out see you next Tuesday and known for it. You know what I mean? Known for it. In fact, his own group came out when they were fucking drunk all the time in shoot interviews and called him out for it too. It's only now that he's kind of nicer. And it's cool because when you get older...
Terror Rose.
Yeah. And there was a lot of terror back then. But obviously, the older the man is now, and when you've got many, many billions sitting in the bank, it's easy to be nice. So, but yeah, I think that's essentially what ceased his career in WWE, because it didn't really get much better from there, Noel, to be fair.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's something that, like, as you said, he was on a major, major rise.
Major.
And all of a sudden, bang, just it all of a sudden stopped.
Yeah.
And he was dropped down, and that was it. Like, you know, it came out of nowhere. He seemed destined for the big time, you know, for a cup of coffee in the big time.
Every time you do that to me, Joe, I get it. Do it right.
I knew you'd do it.
You see that, Gino? Sorry.
But men at an IC level who could legitimize a company strap, and I know we often say you got to take a look at who's above the IC at the time to find your place in it. And if your place isn't in it, maybe you don't belong there. The likes, a perfect example would be Val Venus, perfect IC champ. But that's where the fucking train stop ends.
Yeah.
Ken didn't have them limitations. Put him in any mix, in any era, at any time, with anybody, and your belt on him is a 9 to 10 month run of quality feud, absolute wrestling, charisma, and nothing is taken away from your strap. Nothing is taken away from the company's highest accolade.
And utter legitimacy for the belt too. And the company too for putting it on him.
Like, you know, Joe, have his name on that illustrious history, even 20 years from now, even 100 years from now, Ken Shamrock wore this? Wow. It makes no business sense.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd even say wow, Jay. I think people would say wow more so now that his name isn't on it. I think people, if as you said, 20 years on, they'd go down the list and say Ken Shamrock was up. Well, of course he's on. You know what I mean?
I'd be surprised if he wasn't.
What the hell is he on? You know, it would have been, oh yeah, of course he's on it. They keep scrolling past.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It wouldn't make
this guy. I doubt it. I get you. Yeah.
You know, I don't think it'd be a wow moment. I think it'd be just like, yeah, of course he's on it. And just keep running, looking for the oddball.
I would have loved.
But that's what I mean. That's what I mean in a reverse sense. I'm like, you scroll down, you're like, really, 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 really. Whoa, Ken Shamrock. Okay, maybe I need to watch this belt's history.
I'd love this scenario. It's like, okay, I'm not good enough to hold your world championship. Okay, Mr. Rising, why don't you come down to where I'm from and you hold my world championship and see if you can win that?
He's running at 25% now.
Oh, he's going down the more we talk. Only Terror Rising, though. Only Terror Rising.
Host, can we have a HB beside Ian's face every time we do a shoot?
Not the CEO, only terrorizing. The CEO's okay.
I'm already thinking of a graphic to put on this already.
You know the funny thing about it is the more we talk about it, it's like, oh my god, you were actually a rotten human being back in the day. But I also appreciate
it's only been a week.
But hear me out. I appreciate the ability for people to change and adapt, and that's what I'm saying. So
were they even the same person? We're only a week
definitely
gone.
Not. Well, do you know what? It's the old Charles Manson adage, like you're feeding people, you know. Shawn Michaels is there on pills. Yeah, no problem. The man that's sober is the scary one because he knows what's going on.
We've had too much heart talk tonight.
So goes on.
But he's not wrong.
Thanks, Jay.
At least he never played the God card. He never played the God card. That's the main thing.
Who?
Hunter.
Oh, well, no. I mean, that would have been too much. That would have been too much for him, to be fair. John deserved it, man. He was Bible studying. Would you stop?
They all deserved it. God's disciple, apparently, apparently Shamrock didn't. Jesus, goddamn, Tilly Christ, what do you have to be to wear the big belt in this life?
Just not around Triple H back in 1990.
Vince got to war for the love of Christ.
I mean, the problem was Vince was like, okay, Hunter, I agree with everything you say, but you see the lad that you see that Samoan, half black man over there? You ain't fucking changing my mind on him. He's better than you. Get over it, son. Boy. And the baldy fella, the baldy white redneck beside him, yeah, you're never going to be on that level, son. You married my daughter, accept it. You've always got to get money. But they are much bigger than you.
They are buku bucks, man. Buku.
It was the feud with Ken Shamrock that drew the Rock out of Rocky Maivia. It was like, who do you want to be? Raise your eyebrow and tell me how sure I am. Go on. Say it to me once.
That's
say
what Shamrock's doing for the business. Throw me some words at you.
Throw me some words. Yeah. Now you're a champ. Yeah. Now you're no Maivia. Now you're running gold, baby.
I thought to this day that was all Russo, no?
Staying on point. Did you see,
a man like Russo couldn't write Shamrock.
Do you ever see, though, The Rock and Shamrock's relationship even? The Rock sometimes randomly tags him in like a post and just, you know, appreciates him, which is great to see, like, and vice versa. It's like, you know, it was them versus us kind of thing. You know what I mean? And it was for a long time. It was the same with the
Click. Yeah.
In 97. Like, there was the Click, and that was it. And the Click had management's ear, and we've known this now. It's true. And then there was the rest of the boys that were the real locker room, if you get me. The best of the rest. But the real fucking workers that cared about the business more so than their own personal gain. And it's great to see those little relationships like that still exist. You know what I mean? When I saw The Rock, I think it was a few months ago, that The Rock looked back at a match with Ken Shamrock, or the Ken Shamrock had tagged The Rock, and Ken Shamrock was like so happy that like the world's biggest movie star, you know, acknowledged the
recognized
fact
that,
him. Yeah. And I think that was beautiful.
For me, it was Ken that drew The Rock out of my view.
I believe that. Yeah.
I think that was related to his induction into the TNA Hall of Fame.
That's what it was, and The Rock actually acknowledged that, which I think is great.
He sent him a little video, didn't he?
That's as good as The Rock acknowledging Joe Doignan right now. Let's give Joe an appreciation. He acknowledged TNA.
No, but he did not just that. He was part of the video package to induct.
I know. I'm only teasing you. Yeah. But no, it's true.
Oh, he got paid.
I don't think TNA offered The Rock enough dollars.
Maybe The Rock hasn't acknowledged Joe Doignan.
Let's get a hashtag. But The Rock has
recognized Joe Doignan.
Justice for Joe.
Yeah.
Justice for Joe. Or no, maybe we could just call him Just Joe, and The Rock will just.
The Muck says, shut your mouth. Sorry, now I'm The Muck.
This is the worst thing now, because we have all this real great banter, and then I have to bring it back to talk about all the stuff you don't want to talk about. Like, dropping the IC belt to Val Venus at St. Valentine's.
And like how Ian really feels about the Click. The Muck says, keep on talking.
I played the fifth.
Shamrock went on then. He had a feud with the Undertaker at Backlash and lost. And then afterwards, then he formed part of a group called The Union, who wanted to go up against the corporate ministry, but it was shortly dissolved after defeating the corporate ministry at Over the Edge in May. Yeah, that Triple H, he's at nearly 15% now at this stage, is he?
Ooh. Terror Royal.
You need to get a little gauge.
I gotta get the H quake.
No, you know that countdown clock. You know the clock on countdown, and H is facing the middle of it. he briefly feuded with Jeff Jarrett, and then began his feud, of course, against Steve Blackman, which we obviously
alluded to. He had some great stuff with Jarrett, actually, if I recall, didn't he?
Yeah. And when Shamrock, he defeated Black Man in a Lion's Den weapons match. I remember that one, actually.
The cage, yeah.
The fact that Blackman
actually... The hardcore Lion's Den, yeah.
Do you know the funny thing about Blackman? He was one of those... He was one of those lads that Joe Rogan would talk about, you know, those instructors that, like, they're legends in their own minds. Like, Blackman...
Oh, he was a beast.
Yeah, but there's not many... There's not much, like, yeah, there's no UFCs of Blackman beating the shit out of people, though.
Well, no, he wasn't real.
Exactly. No, but that's what I'm saying. But Blackman was coming out and shoot interviews up until even recently going, well, you know, I would have fought Ken for the right money. And apparently Ken got hold of it. And he was like, Ken was like, well, look at the shape of me now. Why don't you do it now? And Blackman was
still
like,
here. No, I haven't died.
That was the end of Blackman's shoot career.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. Again, we talk about progression of the industry. Weapons in a tiny cage became tour de nom about 3-4 years later. I mean, that weapons match in the fucking cage in the Lion's Den. It's almost every second pay-per-view now.
Yeah, I always found
Blackman's flat top weird.
Do you know what Blackman was?
He and
was
his cold of... dead eyes. Yeah, the eyes of a shark, but the heart of a swallow.
Blackman is like that guy that the, you know, that kickboxer was based on. You know, like he won a million fights, but no one ever saw them.
Yeah.
And literally, like, not even a nose. His nose, like, you know, like, everyone can see my nose. It's been broken many a time. And like Blackman's just perfect little petite. Well, you know, they never hit me. That's why they couldn't get to me. They just couldn't get to me.
And you know what
Blackman really, if you look at his list of accolades, you can guarantee he's one of those guys that was like a patterns champion that could just do all the formations.
Yeah, but he was probably lovely. He probably
did this lovely milk, man. Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Nice guy. But then when you got somebody who's like, we need to make somebody like Ken Shamrock. He needs to be purveyor of martial arts, but in a Bruce Lee movie kind of way, and not be mean at all. I'm like, but don't we have Ken Shamrock working in our company? Yes. I was like, why don't we just use our original Ken Shamrock?
Well, you know, I gotta work.
Yeah. He went on to feud then with the newly debuted Chris Jericho. Until he departed in late 99 in order to resume his mixed martial arts career. So, either one or two things happened. He seen what was unfolding there, and he also got fed up working punches and wanted to let off a bit of steam.
Well, yeah, because he would have killed someone on the gauge meter there that's up.
Yeah. I would imagine as well, Noel, I'd say there was a lot of frustration that, as Ian alluded to earlier, that his career was on such a massive trajectory, then stopped all of a sudden and he was dropped down. And I think he was fed up and he probably just wanted to legitimize himself again. Feel legitimate.
Politics,
again
yeah, like if politics are holding you down and you know that there's guys there that you cannot physically win and beat up unless you got a lawsuit on your hands. Like, especially at that time, you know, when they were starting to become corporate and stuff like that.
I think it's a combination of things with him. I think one, he missed legitimacy. I think two, at the time he quit WWE, he had 4 or 5 young kids. I think at 3, he wasn't a stupid man. He's a very astute man in his career, and he realized his trajectory, like we spoke, was stopped in its tracks. And 4, because he was a somebody before he went into that company, regardless of how much he loved it, he had fucking opportunities outside of it, which paid him a hell of a lot more than parking up and touring for 300 days a year for a certain amount of money when he could throw a lot of sponsorship over his body and smash the teeth out of people.
With more injuries too, yeah. More injuries in wrestling too, yeah.
Like, tour for 300 days a year at an adequate income when you've got a young family and you can't fucking Shamrock, or I'll just leave this. Try me hand out a few fucking adverts and punch the guts out of people for real money and see what other opportunities await me. I mean, he's not a man who sits still.
Well, he put Tito Ortiz over a couple of times, didn't he?
Didn't he? He knows what sells. He did some good money.
He ran after him for a long time, all right.
Yeah, no, he definitely chased him.
And Tito kept ducking him and beating all his students.
He waited till Ken was old. He done the Floyd Mayweather trick. He waited till
Hey, old man.
Yeah. What? Oh, now you want to fight me, Pacquiao? That's no problem. I'll do that now that you're slowing down. Okay.
It's mad when you think about Tito Ortiz, isn't it? I mean, he was really that pro wrestler when you think about the promos and all the stuff that he brought in there. I always remember Tito.
But he's actually such a goofball as well. Like, the thing about is, like, Tito Ortiz would kick the shit out of me. We know that. Yeah. He's a fucking professional fighter. He's a badass man. But just an actual unlikable man in the sense that not as a heel, just as an out-and-out douchebag. You know what I mean? I know you're trying to be unlikable now, but you're
actually... Tito is a very skilled imbecile.
Yes, that's exactly the best way of saying it, Jay. I think you said something similar to me years ago. It's like, don't actually like you. You're trying too hard, and you don't need to try. Yeah. Just be yourself.
You know, when Jenna Jameson leaves you because you slapped her one too many times, you're not too smart, Tito, are you?
And then Tito comes out and does a fucking kayfabe video, because we would be remiss without talking about Tito without Ken Shamrock, you know what I mean? In a Ken Shamrock video. And I don't know when we're ever going to talk about Tito again. Probably never. But, like...
Probably never.
She was
the nails of the MMA world.
But imagine Stone Cold and Deborah, right? We know that story. We're not going to get into too much because there's lawsuits behind this. So obviously,
and also Dark Side of the Ring and A&E fucking biographies select what they want to do about people who are alive.
And look, that doesn't mean that Jay is judging Stone Cold either. He knows that.
It absolutely does.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But the thing about it is, Tito comes out and goes, "I was the one that was getting beaten." What?
He's a liar.
You absolute liar, man.
Maybe he isn't.
No, he is.
No. The only time Tito's a bitch is when he steps into the ring with somebody like Ken.
Oh, the best thing I've ever seen with Tito Ortiz, the best work Tito has ever done, was when Randy Couture had him on his back and tapped his fucking ass. Slapping his ass. And he's getting up going...
In fairness to Tito as well, he did lay a couple of beatdowns on Ken. In fairness.
Fair. An old man. Yeah.
Fair.
Doesn't matter.
And then Chuck Liddell went in and absolutely iced him out. And then he waited until Chuck was older and came back and beat Chuck when he was old.
Yeah.
He took Shamrock for a long time. You know,
he did.
And like, in fairness to Tito, management wanted him to duck Shamrock. Because he was making the UFC huge money.
Oh, there's no money in loss.
Yeah, he was the poster boy. He was the one making all the headlines. The last thing they needed was this old fella that was seen as a professional wrestler, you know, not a legit fighter anymore, coming in and beating their golden boy. The management were definitely keeping them apart on purpose too.
Tito went to TNA.
Look, yeah. There's money in promo. It was the same, Ian. You remember... Steve Collins had fucking American Fighter duck him. No, he smashed
Roy Jones.
Roy Jones spoke smack about Steve for years and ducked him for years. When it was time to put it together, Steve had no problem with getting the fight together. But what you call him again?
Roy Jones Jr.
Had serious issue with stepping into the ring when he had gloves on him. When he gets swing those gloves.
Yeah. Joe, do you want to touch on, before we finish up, obviously, on Ken, do you want to touch on some of his TNA career?
He didn't have a huge TNA career, wasn't there, for a long time. I think he wanted to get back into the fight game. He still wanted to be in the fight game at the time. But he turned the clock back because he grew out the...
I love them. The locks, man. Yeah. I love them.
He went full Wolverine.
Yeah, he grew them.
I had them at one time as well, and I was like, no, they don't look cool. Not with long hair, anyway.
Yeah, Noel, you can correct me there, here now, but I'm pretty sure he was their inaugural champion as well, wasn't he?
He was the first NWA TNA champ, yes. Yeah. And that belt looked good around him.
Yeah, and he carried that 10 pounds of gold, you know, and he brought a lot of, you know, he brought a lot of eyes to that company too, you know. And then I'm fast forwarding way forward here, but a few years ago there, he was in, he was in touch with the WWE, telling them, you know, I want to get back. You know, I'm ready to go back in the ring. And I think it was you, Ian, alluded to it, that maybe it was Jay that said, that's not happening. You're not coming back to WWE. Yeah. And that's that. So Impact took a chance on him and brought him back. And he was doing a bit there for them, and he got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And he still looks so good still, you know. And he was still able to move, and he still had that fucking mad intensity still.
I'd say that jealousy from Terra is just absolutely incredible. So, well, Joe, would you be willing to do business with me at WrestleMania, and I can go over the way I did with Sting? You know, because I like to take hot commodities and make myself look bigger than them.
Oh, can you imagine him shooting on that Mania? Oh, the only reason the H won't step into the ring, and I'm going to say this, and it's rare I say this, sometimes Vince has a problem with men who look too old to get back into his fucking ring when they are willing and ready to, and he is alluded to it years ago. It's the reason Match was put on the fucking mic. Shamrock right now, with how he fucking looks and the body under his neck, he looks fucking gold. He looks quality. He looks Joe Bugner. He looks Jack Dempsey. He looks, yeah. Well, let me tell all of you young little pissants something about this business, this tale, and this fucking story. You want gold, you fight for gold every single day.
He looks better than certain favorites that get a match when they want to at WrestleMania. Let's be fair.
He looks like what they wanted. Oh, crossface chicken wing fucking brought back. He looks like what the company wanted Backlund to look like at the time when Backlund didn't look like it. Backlund had the face of a teenager on the body of a fucking old man. Right now, Ken Shamrock looks like the Bruno San Martino face on the fucking guy you need to be. He is perfect story wrestling. You want this belt? Come take it off me. I'll fuck up 25 years of your youth, and I'll fuck up the next 25 years of your future to take what it took for me to get this. He's perfect.
Politics, Joe?
Joe, anything to add?
No, I think Jay hit the nail on the head there. You know,
yeah, me too.
I still think to this day Shamrock could still do a job for a company. I think he's in limbo once again.
AEW were looking at him, though, no?
He had a stint at Impact, and he's been suspended indefinitely from them for in kayfabe, like, for beating up some officials. So I think he's, you know, so he's still, like, there's, you know, he's out there. He still looks fucking fantastic. As Jay
there's said. 15 years of mileage in him.
Yeah, you know, there's and when he was back in Impact, he was having some decent matches. So, like, he can still go, and I think anyone would be very lucky to get him.
AEW should take him. I mean, if Tony Khan's going to be really smart, and, like, I mean, if they're going to bring in some of these two fucking Hardy Bucks mates, like, you know, these little jobbers, like, bring Shamrock in.
Please. Why is he so hot? Why is nobody willing to touch him?
I'll touch him.
Because every time someone hires
him, the
roster absolutely shits itself.
Yeah. Who's this week's champion? Oh, you don't want to know. He's gonna make your nana quiver.
Like Rick Mayle and Adam Edmondson with
right.
You don't want to know.
He's hit what Rick Rude should have been right now in the latter day of his career, and I'm not even watching because it's fucking TNA, and I'm not watching TNA because that communist bastard keeps telling us to.
It's like when they talk about Orange. You can imagine the meeting with Orange Cassidy. Listen, we've tried to legitimize you with Chris Jericho, but now we're bringing in Ken Shamrock. Is that okay? He's gonna knock
out. Oh, you can keep your hands in your pockets. At least they'll be warm when you piss yourself, you little bitch.
You could put Pac alongside Ken Shamrock, and there's your perfect tag team.
Right? Anybody.
Little and large. Like, the two of them would just look perfect beside each other. Just saying.
What a thought.
Oh, imagine there's a thought in putting a team together and I'm not paid to be a fucking wrestling promoter. Tony, hey, come on the show. Talk to us. I'll do it for free.
Well, you do all the shows for free.
Hey, no.
You're fired.
That's why Joe was fired a few weeks ago. He gives away all the inside secrets.
Yeah.
Imagine fired. Joe on the booking committee. Hello. We'd just like to welcome you to today's wrestling show. What's going to happen is Hulk Hogan is going to go over in about 3 minutes and 2 minutes. And Ultimate Warriors are going to come down and literally just gas out in 15 seconds. Oh, and guess what? Yeah, it's all real. Sorry. Oh,
did I that say don't anything? Work for me, brother. Sign off, hot tag.
Gentlemen, a pleasure as always.
I love it, Jack. I love
the career of Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz and a few others.
And Severn Steve Black.
Dave Severn Steve
Black. Terrorizing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
Fry.
And then we took all the mid-card and said, we're all just a waste of time. But a pleasure as always, man. Head over to YouTube. Dynamo Podcast Network. Also check out some of the new great shows that are over there. New Chelsea one, the Chelsea Roar. Also on the Slab, a new
never mind any of that shit. Four Horsemen. Oh, four Pogman.
We don't have a Four Horsemen podcast show.
Also
either,
the four Podmen. Check out some new shows went up this week.
Collector's been drinking.
I see. Pleasure as always, men. Until next time. Cheers.
Niall's fire.